We'll hear from Kevin Durant from his podcast appearance with LeBron James and Steve Nash and how that applies to his new team, the Houston Rockets. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie here on In the Loop alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig, and you as well. On the text line, we talked. Our question of the day earlier was the worst nickname. And Figgy, the 936 texted and said, hey, just like you, their mom calls them Bootman as well, still does to this day, and they have absolutely no idea why.
Yeah. It had nothing to do with boots. Because people used to always try to say, oh, did you used to wear boots all the time? No. I was like 3 months or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I was fresh out the womb, man. So I don't understand where that came from either.
Came out in some fresh Timberlands.
Yeah.
Butters. 713-572-4610 to text the show. Before we get to Durant, I have a question of the day. Mm-hmm. There was some cupcakes in the break room there.
I saw those.
What is your, because those were there like before I think we even came on air. Do you have a time in the day, like how early in the day are you willing to have sweets? Can you have sweets for breakfast?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you'd have a cupcake for breakfast?
Well, a lot of times I'll have pan dulce, you know, the, with coffee and something. Oh, for sure. 100%. Yeah.
I could do it here.
Yeah. Some people do cinnamon rolls for breakfast. I'm not a big.
That's true. Yeah. I was thinking, that's true. That's fair. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking more like a cookie or the non-traditional like breakfast items.
A cupcake for breakfast? Yeah. I don't know.
A brownie, a cupcake, a cookie. Is there a certain time in the day you got to wait to?
Yeah, I did it. I did it here, and I usually don't do that. Like if it was at home, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But here, they brought them on out. I'm like, screw it.
How long do they have to be out before you say no go?
Long time for me.
Yeah, it depends. If it's pretty much covered the right way, then it could last a little bit.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I've rolled in here for the night show and don't have no idea how long that stuff's been sitting. I don't care. I'm digging in. I'll take my chances.
Yeah.
That's what the second host is for, in case I got to run to the bathroom.
We got to get to Kevin Durant here, but we had a beautiful, awesome cake when we were in the Hill Country on Saturday. Mm. And I've been giving my daughter a hard time. About I want a piece of cake. She brought it home in her car. I want a piece of cake. It was so good. I want a piece of that cake. So she brought it this morning. That's still good, right? From Saturday?
Yeah, that should be good. Yeah.
I would have no problem eating it. My only concern is sometimes the cake, it really hardens up.
Yeah.
That's the only problem. But no, I would still eat it.
Yeah, if it's covered up.
It was delicious.
If she covered it up the right way, then good. But some people.
I mean, I'm going to eat it anyway. I'm just curious if I'm breaking any rules.
No, some people just have a cake on the plate and just with the aluminum foil, bury it, covering it.
It's all crispy.
That's when it gets all hard and stuff. That's when you throw it out.
I mean, yeah.
Honestly, my rule, and it's not a good rule for most things, I give everything like a week. Leftovers or whatever, I'll eat it for a week. My girlfriend she can't believe it. She doesn't do that. But yeah, I give everything a week. So the
speaking
cake,
of nicknames,
give it a week.
Speaking of nicknames, my wife, this is just her nickname. One of them, she calls me Iron Gut.
Oh, there you go.
Because I'll eat leftovers a week, 10 days later.
Oh, 10 days. Pushing it. That's pushing it for me. I give it 7.
She calls me Iron Gut.
That's a great quality to have, though.
Yeah.
I think that's a great nickname. Let's get to Kevin Durant. He spoke with LeBron and Steve Nash on this podcast. I think it's called Mind the Game. By the way, I don't know if you guys saw. It is crazy. We watch these guys play and everything, and you forget how big they are. I saw the photo of the three of them stand. Durant is like towering over LeBron.
Yeah he's like 7'3".
I know. Why. He makes LeBron look small. I'm like, oh my God.
And
gosh.
He's going around talking about he's 6'9".
He's 6'9", Figgy.
Man, get the hell out of here, man. You are a liar.
Yes.
It's two liars on this podcast. LeBron and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
That's right. If you haven't seen the photo, go find it on Twitter. He makes LeBron look like Steve Nash. Mm-hmm. But we have a few different clips that I pulled some stuff that I thought was interesting from Durant. Figgy, let's just go in order. We'll start with the first one where he talks about the mid-range. See, this is interesting. I wanted to get to this because during the NBA Finals, I brought up that I think the Thunder and the Pacers even were kind of zigging when everyone was zagging. We're all about threes and layups. The Thunder actually do shoot a lot of mid-range shots. Durant shoots a lot of mid-range. Here was the conversation Nash, LeBron, and Durant were having about still the importance of the mid-range game in today's NBA.
The mid-range has never been more important. It's just it has to come with the right dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
Like the court is spaced now by the role players.
Exactly.
What do you think they're trying to take away? trees and lamps. So the star has to be able to make mid-range shots, or else the team's not going to be able to score in a playoff situation. They have to be able to loosen the defense, takes what they're. So I think the analytics community would agree with that, too.
Yeah,
they would. It's really just we don't want players X, Y, and Z taking a bunch of mid-range.
Because the mid-range, I believe, is if you can't find a good shot, we should look for the good shots early, mm-hmm. the threes. Mm-hmm.
Attack the paint.
Attack the paint. Try to get layups, try to get threes. But when it's 5 to 6 seconds on the clock, get a ball to the best player. Mm-hmm. And if he shoot a mid-range at that point, mm-hmm. then he shoot a mid-range. But we're not going to waste the clock trying to look for a three, 2 seconds on the clock, and we giving it to no
Why
disrespect.
Are you pointing at me?
Dorian Finney-Smith with 2 seconds on the clock to make a three. That's not what we Royce O'Neal. Yeah. That's not – I mean, they can hit it for sure. But that's not sustainable offense for us going forward.
So another thing, what you're also saying is like you pass up a good mid-range shot to get a worse shot.
Exactly.
Right? So there's a balance there to be had.
I love those old souls, man.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. Now, but I thought the way he framed it was really good. You're not going to go back to, you know, posting up in a, or a little, you know, 10-footer bank shot, you know, all that stuff as a regular diet. But to sort of exploit the offense and make that offense better, you can do it, and you should do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that's what the Thunder did really well. Is all the you concentrate so much on the threes, and they said it in that clip. Like, what do you think defenses are trying to take away now? So now there's that vulnerable area in the mid-range, and Durant is really good in the mid-range. So if you're a Rockets fan, you know, expect to see some of that come to the offense this mm-hmm. year, where it's not just all like a lot of the league with the analytics, threes and layups. I mean, Durant is a three-tier scorer. He'll provide some more versatility. The other thing I like about that clip, too, is that was actually before Dorian Finney-Smith signed with the Rockets, and Durant mentions him as the guy. So I don't know if he was actually taking a shot at him or if that was just the name on his head, because maybe he was like having conversations with the Rockets like, hey, here's a guy I like, Dorian Finney-Smith. We should try to sign him. But it's just funny. That's the name he referenced. And then this interview was recorded beforehand, and then shortly afterwards, oh, look at that. He's going to be Durant's teammate.
I thought it was more like, obviously, Finney-Smith is a good player, but he's not Kevin Durant. And, mm-hmm. and their point was, why try to take a late in the shot clock three when you have him right there, you know, to be able to make a mid-range?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I like the idea from Durant because, as I said, you should not ignore the mid-range. And as like they pointed out, why take a lesser shot, a three, when you can get a foul-line jumper? Or it's a higher percentage shot, even if it's two versus three.
Mike D'Antoni punching the air right now.
Yeah, he is.
A lot of people are in modern basketball. Speaking of scoring, Kevin Durant said getting 30 points is now a lot easier today than it was, which bodes well because a concern for Rockets fans is, Durant's 37. Well, maybe it's easier to score now than ever before for Durant. Here's what he had to say.
It definitely, man, it was. I mean, you got two dudes at the box.
Bunch of power forwards in the league.
Most of the time, the whole league wanted floppy. That's the go-to set.
Right.
So we got four guys or eight guys inside the three-point line.
Right in front of the basket.
And all they do was lift upper body. Up top, not a game. They weren't working on their legs back then, man.
So it's all just pushing and shoving.
Pushing and shoving, bro. It's all strong, man. Like Gold's Gym.
Gold's Gym.
I think it was also a Tracy McGrady. Was he the one that said like he could score whatever it was, a ton of points today?
Average
40 today compared to when he was playing. What do you think it's easier nowadays to score? Do you think offense has become easier than it used to be in the NBA?
It depends, and I don't mean to cop out on the type of defense that you're facing and how they're dealing with a Kevin Durant. You know, like the first clip, you know, with the three-pointers and the extended offense, he's going to eat, you know. But there are also going to be teams that are going to be able to try to take him off and push him off his spots, et cetera. I think what he's really getting at there, it's easier to score against all these big dudes that are out there. He's a finesse player. He's a jump shooter. He can get his shot off, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think so. It's, there's just some big brutes inside. Maybe not as
That's fluid.
That's a good phrase. That's a good term for it. Mm-hmm. So I think, but it bodes well for, like I said before, to set up that clip. Those that are concerned, Durant's getting older. Well, he's making the case like, it's easier to score now than even when I first got into the league. Mm-hmm. So that could help out. This next clip I also liked because we talked about this yesterday. It's been my concern with the Rockets about needing more at the guard position. I love their size. I love the length they have. but is it almost too much? Are we ignoring the guards? Here is Durant talking about small guards in modern NBA and how it's kind of hard to have a role for those small guards. This is what Durant said.
Do you think the profile of players changed? Like, I've been thinking, yes. I'm like, I don't know if the 6'2 and under guard is at a premium no more as a starter. Maybe as a backup, but you have to be.
We just talked about this the last.
It's gotten compressed.
It has.
Right? It's compressed. Yes. It's at like either Donovan Mitchell, Drew Holiday, 6'3 or 6'4, Lou Dort, or it's not. You got to be.
You can't get picked on defense. That's the thing, because we play such the pick on game that they will really, literally, if you can't guard, they will bring you up every single time.
Yeah.
And every 6 foot. 6'1", and you're not a bulldog like a Davion Mitchell, Drew Holidays on the defensive side, or you're not an offensive flat out savant like Kyrie, where you can score on dudes 7 feet easily and ISO. Then I just can't see it.
I mean, I think he's right. I think he's absolutely right on that. I mean, that's one of the things about the NBA game today that a lot of people don't like, that it's so many ISOs, so much picking on one guy. Oh, he's going to, you know, that guy is food. You know, people use that term all the time. That's good, you know, offensively, but it kind of changes the flow of the game too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a great clip on that subject from Ketino Mobley talking about him and Steve Francis when they were here in Houston and Rudy T, and they just had an offense called like shake one or shake two. And it was give the ball to one or two of them, and he'd say one or two, and that's how many shakes he'd try to get. It was just one-on-one.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a really interesting clip from Mobley talking about the offense 25 years ago here in Houston and how it was like a street ball. But yeah, it's a fair point from Durant, and then I think it speaks to what the Rockets are trying to do, where, I mean, they just have so much size and length now, and you're going to have four guys on the floor that are all like 6'7 and bigger, and that's just the way. You know, obviously 35 years ago it was crazy to think Magic Johnson could be a point guard. He's too big, and now it's you need all size on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
These smaller guys have been phased out. Let's try to get through these last two pretty quick so we could get to our confessions. But Durant talking about why he was able to play so well offensively with the Warriors. The reason why I picked this, I think it's interesting because similar with the Rockets. People think Durant's going to come here. He's going to be that ball hog. But as you hear from Durant here, he likes playing off of teammates, and he's going to still want to be in a system here in Houston instead of just being the guy. Here was Durant talking about his time in Golden State.
It was easy for me to come off a pin down. It's hard for me to have to dribble through three or four guys and pull up over two dudes with a fadeaway. Like I want, like you said, we want to be efficient. Mm-hmm. Playing off your teammate, that's the easiest way to be efficient. I was getting more backdoor cuts, more transition layups on top of the ISOs, on top of the catch and shoot three. So my game was way more well-rounded in scoring, and it was easier, and I'm way more efficient that way. But I always knew how to play with my teammates, play off my teammates, and the art of scoring is getting the easy points. I always knew that, especially in transition.
I mean, you could hear it in his voice. I think that's what he wants. He wants to be able to why go through all that? You know, why have to get the ball ISO, everybody coming off of their guys to double team you, having to read it, having to muscle through, et cetera, rather than just a back cut and you're open, you catch the ball and shoot.
It kind of makes sense why he actually went to Golden State too.
Yeah.
And why he's trying these different squads. He's not trying to carry a whole team.
Exactly.
Like that.
Right. Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
But there is that perception of like, oh, Durant's in Houston. It's his team. It's just going to be him. Yeah, right. He's going to be the guy at the end of the game, but he is going to fit into this offense and this system.
Yeah,
I think that's good to hear for a Rockets fan. Last clip, and maybe this is the most important for the Rockets fans. Here's Durant praising Ime Udoka as a defensive head coach. And again, this was recorded before he technically was a Houston Rocket. Here's what Durant said about his new head coach.
I even love that you could throw zones in there. They mixing up defense.
That's an evolution, I think, in the last 6 months even.
Mm-hmm. That's like when we play Houston, like Ime Udoka does a good job of that. He will go one possession regular man, next possession zone, go back to man, the next three possessions zone, all in the first
throwing
quarter.
Throwing out balance.
Yeah. In the first quarter. And it's like, okay, how good you are as a team, how connected you are as a group, how well you pass, guys are unselfish. If a coach does that and you're not prepared for it,
you're all off balance. You got no rhythm.
I mean, that's the other side of the ball, and that's what he has that experience. And plus, he's got that great relationship with Ime anyway.
Yeah, it's a big reason why he wanted to be here and why he wound up here. But before he was even a Rocket, he was praising his now head coach and this Rockets team. You can go find the podcast. There's two episodes. It's a really long conversation, but it's an interesting conversation between LeBron, Steve Nash, and Kevin Durant. I think it's Mind the Game is the name of the podcast. But those are some of the clips that stood out from Durant's conversation. Hey, when we come back, it's that time. We got to get to our lunchtime confessions, and we'll do it next here on In the Loop.
All right, everybody loves a good heartwarming story, right? Everybody loves that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're not a big fan of the heartwarming stories?
I am.
All right, did y'all see this one? George Strait made the rounds all over the place. It was a Facebook. It's like millions of views already, et cetera. So George Strait, let me just read it directly. As relief workers distributed supplies and local leaders thanked Strait for his generosity, the 72-year-old singer made an unannounced appearance in one of the hardest-hit towns, talking about the flooding. He donated $3.5 million. Wearing a plain ball cap, jeans, and boots, Strait joined a volunteer crew delivering meals and water to displaced families. Eyewitnesses said he took time to speak with survivors, listen to their stories, and even held a small child who had just been reunited with her parents. Later that evening, Strait met privately with several families who had lost children in the flood. According to those present, he promised to personally cover funeral expenses for every child victim and to establish a scholarship fund in their memory, ensuring their names would never be forgotten. Pretty heartwarming story.
Absolutely.
Not true.
Oh, man.
Oh, it was all a lie?
Dude. And this is my confession. I neither understand why someone would put this out there. People are believing that it's true. But according to George Strait's representative, we have not issued a statement about aid as we're still determining how best to support the community. So apparently somebody put out there that he put $3.5 million donation, did all this stuff, was hugging babies, promising scholarships, et cetera, et cetera. But this is what I just don't understand. Number one, why would you do something like this? And number two, what do you get out of this?
I know it.
What do you get out of posting?
That was a long, drawn out story, too.
Yeah.
That had to take a lot of time.
Not true.
It's weird to make up a story for the positive, right? Like, I get people put out fake news to try to make someone look bad. Mm-hmm. But unless, I guess, maybe you're a huge George Strait fan and you're trying to make him look better, I don't know why someone would make up a story.
He doesn't need it.
I know. It's a weird story to make up.
When you said $3 million, I was thinking in my brain, I'm like, damn, that's a lot of money. Because you got organizations like
doing like a million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, he got it like that where he could just throw $3 million.
I will never understand. And it's like a large part of the country is believing that this is true. It's not. And that's not to say he won't do something. That's the other thing. You put pressure on George Strait.
Yeah. So how are you going to live up to that?
Yeah.
It's true. Now he's got to do something. There's a lot of musicians out there who are not going to do a thing about that. But now because of this fake rumor, like you said, they had to address it. And in their release, they said, like, yeah, we're still determining the best way to go about it. Yeah, now you're forced to do something.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, do we have any type of connection to the...
Well, he obviously lives in San Antonio or has a house in San Antonio, has a house in Rockport, has a house in the Hill Country.
Okay, I was going to say, that's putting a lot of pressure on him, man. Yeah. I don't think he wasn't going to do anything, but... What if he was just chilling, just kind of like, dang, that's messed up, and that's it?
I'm sure he's going to do something. I'm sure his heart is broken. I'm sure he had friends and family, that were affected, if not killed, you know, relatives and such. But what do you get out of this?
Man, clicks, views.
What is that?
I have no idea,
look,
man.
Look, I just did a search on Twitter. Look at this. All these people think it's true. All these people think it's true.
I believe
it.
Yeah. That reminds me of, I think this was around the time DMX, the rapper DMX, passed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rumor, article, all that stuff going around saying Jay-Z bought his masters to get to his family.
Yeah. So,
and it's just like, wait, what? Like, it's not, you know how hard it is to buy somebody's catalog?
Yeah.
And they say, oh, Jay-Z just bought it and gave it to his family. And somebody else had to come out and say, that's not true.
I'm not true.
Why would you make that up?
Exactly. What do you get out of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's weird. Like I said, I don't get, but I understand why somebody would make up bad news about somebody. I don't know why you make up a positive story when it's all false. And as the saying goes, a lie will go around the world while the truth is putting its boots on, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Same, like everyone, no one will see the correction that this story is not true.
Right.
People are going to talk probably years from now. Hey,
oh, he gave
George,
$3.5 million, yeah. All the scholarships and everything.
I'm trying to think of a story like that I could do with Lopez. Lopez pledged to donate $5.5 million to Texas A&M.
I wish.
You sitting there like, wait, what?
Yeah.
He was sitting there holding some babies and shaking hands, and he said he's going to give all of his money in his account to the up-and-coming future. He probably sitting in the bed scrolling like, what?
Yeah. Spread that rumor.
It's insanity and completely impossible to fathom why people would do that.
So yesterday I gave in. I watched this Netflix documentary on the poop cruise. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this.
Yeah.
It left from Galveston,
mm-hmm.
2013. Anyways, I watched the documentary. It's a good documentary. I'd recommend it. It's not even an hour. My problem, though, I guess my confession is I watched it. My problem is I think they had the wrong list of priorities. The whole documentary.
I've heard that, actually. Go ahead.
And the complaint is like, oh, my gosh, we had to poop in bags, which is not ideal, of course. But if you're not familiar with the story, the Carnival Cruise Line lost power, electricity, because of a fire on the boat. They're stranded in the middle of the ocean, and they're out there for a few days. And along the way, like, no power. So the AC stops working. So it's really hot. People take their mattresses out of their room because it's too hot to sleep in the room. They're sleeping in the hallways on the higher decks. They're sleeping out on the deck next to strangers, mm-hmm. just mattresses lined up. They had to wait hours to get food, and the food was just a vegetable sandwich because all the other stuff went bad, and they didn't know how long they could feed these people.
Yeah.
The toilets stopped working, and eventually things started overflowing. Ugh. So the bottom floor of the cruise ship is like a biohazard because there's just human waste flowing around.
Yeah.
These are real problems. You don't know how long you're going to be in the middle of the ocean,
yeah.
and when you're going to be back. Do they have enough water? Do they have enough food? And instead, they spend an hour, these people complaining like, I had to pee in the shower and poop in a bag. You had bigger problems than that. You don't know when your next meal's going to be. You can go in a bag for a couple of days. You're not even eating. How often do you have to go to the bathroom?
Yes.
What do you think the people on the Titanic that survived were complaining about? Were they complaining about, oh, I had to go to the bathroom in a bag. Oh, my goodness.
I saw someone similar was complaining about that documentary online saying, They were saying, like, I'm running low on sunblock. Running low on sunblock? You could die if you don't get water in your body.
Yeah. I know. One woman said, I immediately took Imodium so I wouldn't have to use the bathroom at all. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to start eating that too when you're stuck? Like, you have bigger problems than worrying about. There's towels around. There's plenty of ways to dispose of your waste. I don't know why that was the biggest concern when you don't know when your next meal is going to be.
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. I gotta confess, man. I feel like I'm really old now. I'm so old now. So, I shout out to Garrett who runs the Houston Stressins account mm-hmm. on Twitter. He asked me to hop on his stream last night.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me it was hop on around 9:00.
Okay.
And at that point, I'm like, ooh, 9:00.
That's late.
Woo. Oh, I told my lady, like, baby, I got to stay up tonight. I got some business to handle. And so it's around 5:30, I want to say, about between 5 and 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting on the couch dozing off. I'm like, man, I don't know if I need to take a nap because the worst thing that can happen is me fall asleep around 8:30 and then I wake up at 11 or noon.
Stiff them.
And so I didn't want that to happen. So I decided to take a nap and woke up and, you know, did the stream and all that stuff. It was a good stream. Check it out. But I had a hard time going to sleep last night, man.
Oh, yeah.
I was up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the bed just tossing and turning. It was like two in the morning. I'm just like, man, I'm going to be so tired, but I am struggling right now, man. I'm so sleepy, man. It felt like as soon as I closed my eyes, I finally went to sleep, but I had to wake up
this
morning.
The worst.
I'm like, man, I shouldn't have took that nap, man.
Yep.
I took a quick little, maybe an hour.
A cat nap.
Yeah, about an hour and a half nap. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, after the string, I ended up watching the Astros game, so I got that pissed me off.
Yeah, exactly. Then you get all wired up on that.
Yeah, so I got in the bed. I was wide awake. I'm like, damn, man. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I got to go to sleep. I was rolling around to like 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, man. I don't nap. I intentionally try to avoid naps during the day because whenever I nap, it doesn't matter how long it is, it doesn't matter when it is, I can't sleep at night. Yeah. I can't fall asleep. It throws my my rhythm off. So I'm with you there, Fig. I intentionally never try to take a nap because I can't sleep at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nah, it's the worst.
Did you see the news that Dallas Keuchel, and the Kansas City Royals are in agreement on a minor league contract, according to Jeff Passan?
I had no idea
Dallas Keuchel was still playing baseball. He played as recently as last season.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We're supposed to know all these things. Yeah. And one of the biggest fears of anybody in this business is like, you know, missing something pretty significant. Well, I mean, I wouldn't call this significant. Did you know Dallas Keuchel was still playing baseball?
No, no idea.
Nah, I didn't. And then when you think about the last time he played here, what was that, 2017? He won the World Series.
Yeah, he was on that squad.
Yeah, I can't remember if he – I think that's when he had the contract issues afterwards, mm-hmm. I want to say. But
Dallas Keuchel is still playing baseball.
That's crazy.
I had no idea.
Hey, salute to him, man.
I guess.
Yeah, other people would have been too good to go, do a little minor league deal and all that stuff.
Well, if he makes the majors, it's a $2 million deal, so there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
He's got to make the majors first.
Yeah.
What is he throwing, 67 miles per hour? I don't know. He's throwing the Ephus pitch.
Yeah.
Do we still got the beard?
You got me. I don't know. And another text says, thank you, John, for your donation. All right, well, that's how it starts.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how it starts.
Starting a rumor.
Yeah.
Could you guys name any teams Keuchel has pitched for since leaving the Astros in 2018?
Oh, wow.
He's been passed around.
Yeah. The top of the head, White Sox,
yeah.
Braves.
Yeah.
That's all I can remember.
Who else?
So it was the Braves, then the White Sox, then the Diamondbacks, then the Rangers, then the Twins, then the Brewers, now the Royals.
I didn't know he went to the Rangers.
Pitched for the Rangers?
2022, he made two starts and posted a 12.6 ERA.
Oh, man. My, ouch. Ouch.
Went 0-2. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Allowed 14 How runs old in is 10 he? Innings. 37.
You're right, though, Figgy. Salute to him. Yeah, somebody wants to sign him?
He walking in every door.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoever called. Yeah, I do it.
Yeah. You need a pitcher?
Yeah. Yeah, he said, screw my little family. I got work to do.
That's right. Since leaving the Astros, an ERA over 5 for Keuchel since 2019.
The Astros made the right move for that.
Yeah.
Because they could have paid him a lot of money.
Absolutely, yeah. So, we'll see if he makes it to the big leagues. But no, I'm sure this is the first time hearing of this. I didn't know he was still around. Good luck to him. Hey, when we come back, Judge John Lopez making the return. We have some things to debate and figure out, and we'll do it next in the loop. That's right. When you hear that music, you know what time it is. Judge John Lopez has returned.
Let's go.
I last Wednesday I filled in. I was the judge sitting in your seat while you were gone. It was an honor. It's good to have you back, though. And I'm happy to be on this side of things. Luke Morrow in for Reggie. Alongside John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and we got a case to settle here.
Okay.
Let me set it up first, and then Figgy, you can go first, make your case, and I'll follow. But as tested during the NBA G League season, an unsuccessful end-of-period heave attempt won't be recorded as an individual player stat during the NBA Summer League, which is going on now. The question is, should this become a new rule in the NBA where those half-court heaves at the end of a quarter don't actually count towards the statistics? I will be saying my case is that this rule should be adopted. Figgy is here to say no. And Figgy, I'll let you go first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Your Honor. By the way, appreciate you coming back from vacation. How was your vacation?
Don't start with the always.
You know what? A lot of attorneys do that. Yes, Your Honor. Great to see you again, sir.
Yeah, that's a nice shirt, Your Honor. A nice robe.
I am not above that. So feel free to suck up all you want.
All right. I got some OG in the back, too. OG sauce in the back, too, by the way.
You're leader in the clubhouse.
So, Your Honor, I think this has to count as a a stat because it's still a shot, man. To me, this is – to me, I feel like this – it's part of basketball. It's part of basketball. People won games. Teams won games on heave shots like this, and that counts. So I just don't understand, just for the simple fact you miss it, that means it doesn't count as – it wouldn't go in the stat sheet as a shot.
Right.
What if it was 2 seconds left and somebody just throw a prayer up and they miss it? Do that means that shot doesn't exist or doesn't count because they didn't make it?
Yeah.
Your Honor, I just think this is laughable. I think you should just throw this whole case out.
You're getting some good experience.
I don't even need to call a witness or anything.
I like your confidence, counsel.
Hold on. Let me fire up my AI lawyer to present my case for me. And a call back from yesterday.
Yeah.
No, I like this rule. It should not count because it's such a long shot. It is so different from the rest. We should not put the same weight on a half-court heave or a three-quarter court heave at the end of a quarter as you do a normal jumper in a game. We've all taken big swings in life. I have tried to go up and talk to a pretty woman in a bar many times and have been denied every single time. I don't hold that against my record. I don't count those as my rejections. So same here. These are long shots. You should take big swings, not get punished for it. And I'll also say, I know it's kind of lame we got to this point, but we have gotten to a point where some guys will refuse to take that shot at like the end of the first quarter because they don't want it to hurt their stats. And I know it's stupid that some guys feel that way, but since we have arrived there, this rule addresses that problem where now you don't have to worry about it. Let the shot fly at the end of the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, whatever. No harm, no foul. I know it's old school. People might not like that we need to institute a rule like this, but that's where we are. So I like this rule. Don't make the shots count, and let's get back to allowing these guys the freedom to be able to let it fly at the end of these quarters without a fear of any sort of repercussion towards their stat line.
But, Your Honor, the thing is you have players in the league like a Stephen Curry who can shoot from anywhere. And pretty doggone good at shooting all over the place.
Yeah.
So now whenever he throws up a half-court shot and he doesn't make it, that means that keep his record clean?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that's the right call, man. I think a shot is a shot. If you get a really good shot off, and these are professional players.
Right.
They are pretty good at making half-court shots or full-court shots. And I just don't think we should be babying their stats like that. I think all of these shots should count.
Do you have a retort, counsel?
I don't actually. That was pretty good. Figgy put up a good fight. I don't have anything else to add.
I do. I would like a little bit of clarification from either or both of you. Where exactly is the line? Like the literal line? Is it midcourt? From beyond midcourt, it won't count? Or is it in front of midcourt? It's still a shot? Because I thought Figgy brought up a good point. Steph Curry could take a shot from the circle, the midcourt circle in the middle of the first quarter, and it's a shot. But at the end of a quarter, it's not?
It's fair. I did just look it up. It is from the front of the circle on that half court. So just in front of half court.
Yeah.
On that side of the circle. So anywhere from there behind would not count at the end of a period. So, yeah, kind of Steph Curry range. The front of the circle in your
On your basket.
Court. Yeah.
The basket you're shooting at.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I think it's getting really tricky now because now whenever a player do that, let's say they're close to the circle or maybe they have their foot on the circle. Now you got to go through a review to see if can we count this a shot? And no, this is not a shot. It's too much. And quite frankly, people don't care about this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Only the players care about these stats and stuff. If you really care about your stat, don't shoot the ball. Just dribble the ball out and just head to halftime.
This is an interesting case to me. Figgy made a strong argument, but I thought your argument on it's actually avoiding more action. Like players are not taking a shot. I thought that was strong because they don't want to, and that's what players do because they don't want to hurt their stats. I have one more thought on this. If it goes in, it counts, right?
I know.
If it goes in, it counts. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I think I'm going to have to side with Figgy on this. If it goes in, it's going to count as a stat because it's 2 points or 3 points.
Yeah, honestly, I can't even argue. I think this rule should be instituted, but Figgy made a really good case. And when that point was brought up, it is true that if they are going to count it, if it's made, yeah, then it is lame to be like, oh, he missed it. We can't count it. Yeah. So that's why I didn't have I have nothing to. I can't even BS.
I got nothing, Your Honor.
Yeah, I can't even BS to defend that. I don't like that. I would say if they're going to institute this rule, then you can't count the makes either on their
on
the
player stat
sheet.
Yeah, but it counts on the scoreboard.
I know.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I feel like that's kind of babying them a little bit.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little preschool type of thing where if it works out, then yeah, you get points. If it don't, then we act like it never happened.
Yeah.
Like, man, these guys are professional basketball players, man. Mm-hmm. It's a reason we see a lot of made half court shots. And, yeah. Stuff like that, a lot of trick shots as well.
Yeah,
and so man, I think if you care about your stats that much, then don't even shoot the damn ball. Just dribble it out.
Yeah, that's what
give it
doing.
To the ref.
And that's a problem. So I'm not gonna say we can't revisit this because if it's a growing problem, then we maybe need to side with Luke on this. But for now, I think I'll side with Figgy.
All right, we'll schedule the appeal for 12 months from now.
Yep, yeah, me and Luke, we can head to lunch and then talk about the case.
That's right.
Yeah. So Luke can say, oh, yeah, I agree with you the whole time.
Yeah. I always love that. I assume there's some accuracy in that, but you do see like in movies or shows where the lawyers are somewhat friendly and they do get together after the case. And they
all the time.
Yeah, and they acknowledge the other one.
Like, it's always the attorney and the DA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just
right.
Be battling it out in court.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, they go out for drinks after they just convicted somebody for murder.
Right.
Yeah. She'd be like, yeah, you did have a good point right there, man. Yeah. What you doing tomorrow?
Yeah, you got me. So, I just hate that we have gotten to this point because, like, they do it with the shot clock, too, which is kind of funny that when the shot clock is expiring, they'll pass the ball to somebody at the last second so they get the turnover instead. And it is lame that these guys do care so much about their stats to the point where they're not going to take a shot at the end of a quarter that could potentially help their team. But unfortunately, that's where we are. And so I think something should be done to address it because, as we've already discussed, I think it's stupid. Fire off the shot. Don't just dribble out the clock.
No, I think that's strong. I thought that was your best point. I mean, because if you're not taking a shot, you're hurting your team. And if you're not taking a shot with it because of the stats, I understand it. That's what players care about.
Yeah.
But I thought a really good point. Go ahead, Figgy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of respect them not taking a shot, like especially depending on who it is. Because if you giving the ball to Andre Drummond or something, like that dog, he ain't about to make no shot. So he's just not even wasting his time at that point. So I kind of respect it sometimes, but you do see a lot of players that try to make that shot, even though they might be down by a lot of points or up by a lot of points, but they still try to make that shot.
I think a really good point from the text board, the A32, you know, a Hail Mary pass.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Hail Mary pass. Let's say C.J. Stroud is 17 for 17 in the first half, and then he throws a Hail Mary. Yeah, and I don't even know what the record is for consecutive completions with the Texans. I'd have to look it up. But either way, he throws a Hail Mary that bounces to the ground, and then he completes 9 straight to start the second half.
Yeah.
You know, that could – that would be more of an argument that it shouldn't count.
Yeah, you're convincing me with that. I like that. In the NFL, we shouldn't count these Hail Marys at the end of halves.
Mm-hmm. But if he did make it, it would count.
Yeah, that's why I went with you on this.
Yeah, I know. It's true. That's why that is tricky. I agree. It's babying. That's just where we are. I hate it when they ban the shifts in baseball. There's been shifts for 100 years. Just learn to hit the other way. But, you know, this is where we are now, where we have to change the rules for the modern athletes.
How y'all feel about just the man on second to start the extra innings?
Never really been a huge fan, but I understand it in the regular season.
Trying to keep it going.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never liked it. I still don't like it.
By the way, the record for Houston Texans consecutive completions. Let's play the game, the guessing game here again.
Consecutive?
The record for Houston Texans consecutive completions in a game.
I'm gonna say Matt Schaub. Are we naming the player?
Yeah.
Or how many?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Matt Schaub.
Oh, just naming the player?
Yeah.
I would have said Schaub too, but I don't want to copy you, so I'll go with Deshaun.
David Carr.
Oh, what?
Of course.
Are you kidding?
That was gonna be the last one.
Are you kidding? David Carr on it was November. Let's see, I've got it right here. David Carr completed 22 consecutive passes in 2006.
Dang, 22. How many?
22.
Dang.
November 19th, 2006, versus the Buffalo Bills, David Carr completed 22 straight passes. They were all screwed.
What did he finish with?
9 interceptions. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I wonder how did he do in that game.
I got it here. Yeah. They lost to the Bills that day, 24-21, to fall to 3-7. Carr went 25 of 30, but 223 yards and an interception.
A bunch of dump offs.
A bunch of screens.
Quarterback rating of 83.
Yeah,
that's an average of...
I never would have guessed David Carr.
Yeah,
7 yards per attempt. Yeah. Not great.
Never. I would have said Brock Osweiler before I'd say David Carr.
Rosenfels.
Yeah. Oh, somebody mentioned that earlier for the top Texans moment was mm-hmm. the helicopter. From
the Rosencopter?
Yeah, that is up there. I remember mm-hmm. where I was when that happened, too. So.
Yeah.
That's memorable for
that
sure.
That is so unforgettable. Ball flies out and he's in midstream.
Yeah. Yeah, he left it all out there. Mm-hmm. Some good text coming in, too, about the whole NBA thing. This makes me hate the NBA even more than I already did. But then somebody else said it's good for the game. Someone else says it entices more highlight plays.
It really is coddling these players.
It is. Sure. If anything, I will make it maybe a 4-pointer or a 5-pointer or something mm-hmm. like that. If you really want people to try to heave up passes like that, they should make up some type of rule maybe in the last whatever seconds mm-hmm. and maybe the first half or maybe the first three quarters or something like that. Yeah. Maybe make it like a 6-pointer or something.
By the way, last thing, and then we'll head to LeBron did mention on that podcast we heard from with Durant, he did mention about adding a 4-point shot now because of how good these shooters are. Not that that's been talked about, but that was a conversation they had too, was because how good of shooters everyone is.
Yeah,
add a 4-point shot to the league. Which Texans player, not named CJ Stroud, are the most indispensable right now for the Texans? We'll talk about that next in The Loop.